listening to Gossip Int, the way to gossip intelligently. Gossip Int is a podcast that helps listeners learn critical thinking concepts by applying them to well-known pop culture events and real-world technology-focused examples. Here with us today are Caitlin Hopkins and Laura Luthi, and I'm Karen Frost. Although the three of our participants today work for Microsoft, the views expressed on this podcast belong to us alone and do not represent the views of Microsoft. Today's structured analytic technique is scenarios. Scenarios, which includes the subcategories alternative futures analysis, multiple scenarios generation, and simple scenarios, is a way of systematically thinking through possible outcomes of a complex or uncertain situation. Unlike the last few structured analytic techniques we've been discussing, which were contrarian techniques, this is an imaginative technique. This means we're not challenging a pre-existing idea or assumption, but rather opening ourselves up to the idea that we're not certain which way events will trend, and trying to envision the multiple possible futures that could occur. We use scenarios naturally in our everyday life without realizing it. For example, the phone rings and it's the administrators at your child's school. Immediately, your mind flashes to all the reasons they could be calling. Your child is sick. Your child has been hurt. Your child has hurt someone else's child. Something has happened at the school, a fire, for example. These are all scenarios you've automatically generated in the absence of actual information. That's a reactive, unstructured example. Like many of our structured analytic techniques, this technique works well in a predictive, proactive context. This means we're using it to prepare for a future event so that we're unsurprised, or at least less surprised, if it happens. For example, we could use scenarios to think through what might happen in a first-time face-to-face contact with aliens. We might think of hostile invasion scenarios, or a we come in peace to teach you philanthropic scenario, or a sort of scientific study scenario. Basically, we're a giant anthropology experiment for the aliens who are more interested in observing and monitoring than engaging. In this example, we're using scenarios because not only are there a lot of unknowns, for example, could we even find a common means of communication, but also what we call unknown unknowns. This means there are factors at play we couldn't even begin to properly predict. We have to get imaginative to come up with solutions. From an academic perspective, using the scenario structured analytic technique helps us weigh multiple factors to come up with two or more plausible outcomes. It can also help us think through the costs, risks, and opportunities of various scenarios. And as I said, reduce surprise in the event that one of the scenarios comes to pass. Put another way, we can use scenarios for contingency planning. And finally, something that won't surprise you if you listen to our other podcasts, this technique helps us come up with signposts and indicators to help us track whether any of the scenarios are coming true. Signposts and indicators are such a key component of critical thinking because it helps us track patterns and integrate new information with what we already know. There's a reason I love it as a technique and a practice. Now, I said there are three subcategories of scenarios. Alternative futures analysis is carried out by selecting the two most critical and uncertain forces and putting them on axes representing a spectrum of extremes. This creates a four-quadrant graph of possible outcomes. It's an interesting technique, but for most of us, it's not going to be something we do on the fly. It's a little too technical. Instead, we'll probably use simple scenarios. For that, all we do is start with our issue. For example, what could happen if we made contact with aliens? Then begin thinking through the forces, factors, and events most likely to shape the outcome. When coming up with our scenarios, we can either not weigh them and assume they're all equally plausible, or weight them. This weighting could be something like from most plausible to least plausible, or worst case to best case. I want to remind listeners at this point that while structured analytic techniques are generally forward-facing, in practice, we can and do apply them retroactively all the time. For example, the internet was recently abuzz over events at the Venice International Film Festival, where it appeared that British pop singer Harry Styles may possibly, per some internet users, have spit on actor Chris Pine's hands. Obviously, this is a past event, but we can still come up with scenarios for it. And in fact, the signposts and indicators for those scenarios can be both past events, making them evidence, not signposts, and future events. So in practice, we can use a structured analytic technique like this retroactively in cases where there's limited information. Again, this isn't a traditional application of the technique, and some people might argue that it isn't an application at all. But here at Gossip Inn, we're all about learning and finding ways to learn. So as we work on our critical thinking, it can help to look backward and practice that way rather than only looking forward. And by the way, speaking of scenarios and future events, here's an event that by the time this episode is released, will already have come to pass. So listeners will have the answer that we, as we record this, can only guess and can check us on whether our scenarios were right. On October 21st, singer Taylor Swift will be releasing her next album, Midnights. If you listen to our Taylor Swift Karlie Kloss episode, you'll know that many Swift fans think the two women dated. In fact, many fans think Karlie's not Swift's only female ex, with actress Diana Agra named as a possible former paramour. Of the album, Swift has said, "We lie awake in love and in fear, in turmoil and in tears. We twist in our self-made cages and pray that we aren't, right this minute, about to make some fateful life-altering mistake." Given all that, we could come up with the following scenarios for the release of the album. 1. Swift admits that she has been in love with or dated women in the past, thereby publicly announcing she is not heterosexual, but she doesn't break up with her current partner, Joe Alwyn. 2. Swift continues to hint at secret love and caged emotions in her songs without specifying a gender or construed in a way that could be interpreted multiple ways. And she continues to date Joe Alwyn. 3. Swift uses the album to come out as a lesbian and breaks up with Alwyn. Ideally, when we create scenarios, we want them to be mutually exclusive, and these three are pretty clean cut. However, this is a situation in which signposts and indicators are useless. Because of how private Swift is and the way she controls the media, we won't know which scenario it is until we're right in the middle of it. There's no way to start tracking which direction we're trending until we're already there. Now, does that make the exercise useless? No, not at all. The utility here is understanding that there are more than two possible scenarios. In fact, there could be scenarios that we haven't even thought of. This exercise reminds us to always think broadly about issues and not default to assuming a limited range of possibilities. Caitlin, you've got pop culture this week. What scenarios can we come up with in the pop culture world that will help teach our listeners about how to apply this structured analytic technique?
Instead of talking about a specific celebrity, I think a good way to discuss pop culture using scenarios would be to talk about the future of celebrity. Specifically, how being a celebrity has already changed and how it could be changing in the future. So I want to start with a little bit of background because often understanding an issue's history helps us to better understand and better predict its future. So how has celebrity and fame changed throughout history and what factors influenced its change? Something to think about is how much celebrity has always relied on publicity and how it's changed from leaders and intellectuals to, well, we'll get into who today's celebrities are in just a minute. When we think of who celebrities are in the pre-modern era, it was individuals who, to use a metaphor here, got their name in the paper, like Cleopatra, Alexander the Great, and King Louis XIV. These were individuals who were successfully able to create larger-than-life images for themselves, and their names were passed down to later generations by biographers and historians. The key here was the written word. People knew Aristotle and Cicero, for example, because you could access and read their works. Their thoughts were highly influential, and people knew rulers like Caesar because of the lasting impact they left on political systems. This trend continued well into the 1800s. The earliest celebrities in America were politicians, scholars, soldiers, and patriots. They became famous as a result of biographies, press articles, and their own personal writings published in essays and newspapers. But celebrity, as we think of it now, really took off with the invention of the high-speed printing press, and then even more impactfully, film. This started a fundamental shift in what we view as celebrity, separating politicians and academics from the new breed of celebrities. Charlie Chaplin epitomizes this reorientation of the public interest. And since then, the trend has only intensified. We might say that video started to decouple the relationship between celebrity and traditional achievements. So for example, Charles Lindbergh was a celebrity in his time for flying across the Atlantic Ocean, but the Beatles were famous for singing.
But some things remain kind of the same, right? So, for example, I think we could say Freud was a celebrity in his time, and everyone knew Neil Armstrong was the first man to walk on the moon. So achievements still mattered.
Yeah, sure. But we start to see a change as people begin to have TVs in their home. The post-2000 widespread presence of the internet has only fueled the shift to expand what we defined fame and celebrity as. The two changes have been in expanding the geographic reach of celebrity influence, opening further who we identify as celebrities. Nowadays, a celebrity can be a social and media influencer, a gamer, or reality TV star, categories of celebrities that didn't exist 20 years ago. And a surprisingly large number of Americans can't name the current vice president. They can easily name dozens of actors and actresses. For that matter, they may not be able to name five US presidents, but they could name all the individual members of Korean pop group BTS. Before we go into scenarios, I want to say one final thing about how the evolution of social media has affected what types of people become celebrities, because that will be important to our scenarios. Like I said before, the earliest celebrities were politicians and scholars. Then they were celebrities famous for a specific talent, actors, athletes, musicians, and singers. Now we have influencers, what we might think of as normal people who are able to leverage social media to reach huge numbers of followers. The key here is that celebrity as a description isn't static. It changes with time based on how people get their information.
I'm hearing what you're saying, but I have no idea how this becomes a scenarios exercise. How can we possibly turn this into a structured analytic technique?
The scenario structured analytic technique can be about predicting future outcomes. In this case, we're asking ourselves, what are possible scenarios for what celebrities look like in 2042?
20 years away isn't a long time for things to change. What sort of scenarios can we realistically come up with?
We've already determined that technology has been a huge agent of change for celebrities. One of the most disruptive technologies right now is artificial intelligence, or AI. We talked in a previous episode about how a company using AI to help film producers select actors and actresses for their movies based on marketability. In short, AI algorithms combined with market trends and an actor's qualities and traits can be used to compare the forecast success of a movie starring maybe Channing Tatum versus its forecasted success starring Zac Efron. But this isn't the only way that AI is being leveraged in the film industry. In November 2019, it was announced that James Dean, who died in 1955, would be, quote-unquote, cast in the remake of the movie Finding Jack. To make this possible, computer-generated imagery, or CGI, will be created using actual footage and photos of the deceased actor. This hasn't been possible in the past using only CGI, because making the computer-generated image interact with the foreground and background is tedious, time-consuming, and very costly. But with the help of AI and machine learning to help automate the compositing and editing process, it's finally possible. In fact, it's already kind of been done. For instance, filmmakers combined a pre-existing footage, CGI, and AI to paste Carrie Fisher's face on a digital body for Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. This AI process of superimposing human features on a body double and/or manipulating the sounds is often referred to as deepfake technology. And deepfakes lead us to our first scenario. Hollywood massively increases the use of deepfakes to cast movies, resulting in a weird scenario in which half our popular celebrities are dead, yet still producing new content, and half our celebrities are alive, but interacting with these deepfakes. This is similar to your previous story about how Tupac Shakur and Whitney Houston's holograms were being used for musical performances. But what happens if your favorite celebrity died like 50 years ago, but is now twerking on a Marvel TV show?
Okay, I see what you mean. Rather than Ana de Armas playing Marilyn Monroe, a deepfake Monroe starts starring in her own movies. Trippy. I guess the downside is she doesn't run her own Twitter account?
And that may be a problem. Fans like the idea of being part of a celebrity's life, hence the popularity of the Kardashians. But how real does that life have to be? That question leads us to our second scenario. Deepfakes don't catch on in Hollywood, but they do supplant influencers. Right now, social media influencers seem unavoidable. From kids unboxing toys on YouTube to girls talking about makeup on Instagram, it seems like a growing market. But brands could eventually get around them by using deepfakes. This would mean while influencers could still be celebrities, the influencers wouldn't necessarily be human. A US-based technology startup specializing in AI and robotics called Brood recently debuted Little Michaela. Little Michaela is a 100% digital avatar, but she doesn't exactly seem like it. Her photos are so realistic, they often prompt comments from Instagram users asking, "Are you real?" Lil Michaela often collaborates with global fashion houses, such as Prada, Givenchy, and Moncler, to promote their products. And Lil Michaela even sings and has released multiple singles under a record label owned by Brood. And while digital entertainers and influencers like Lil Michaela are currently novel technology, we shouldn't close ourselves off to the idea that brands could go with a fabricated persona rather than risking their reputation on an influencer who may one day be discovered to have some undesirable hobbies or opinions.
For our listeners who can't immediately Google this, I just did. And Lil Michaela definitely doesn't look quite like a real person. But give the technology another 2 years and she absolutely will. It's creepy.
Right. And our final scenario is that Hollywood moves away from traditional model of A-list, multi-million dollar celebrities, and instead disperses the power of celebrity by using more no-name casting. For decades, Hollywood has looked into A-list celebrities to sell products, whether that's perfume, movies, or even car insurance. But at least when it comes to movies, is it really worth the $35 million to cast Will Smith? Or can the studio use a relative nobody and hope the plot or special effects carry the day? Right now, no one is talking about getting rid of Dwayne Johnsons and the Tom Cruises of the world, but some of the streaming services have shown that a movie or TV show can be successful without those big names. For example, most of the Game of Thrones cast was completely unknown when the show started. And does anyone remember the movie Paranormal from 2007? From a $450,000 budget, it made almost $90 million, a return of over 19,000%. You don't necessarily need big names to make a profit. What this would mean is that an unknown actress could play the key role in a Netflix movie and then never be cast again for a major role. She may become temporarily famous, but with no other roles, her star would quickly dim, and Netflix would move on to the next cheap but talented actress. Overall, the effect on celebrities would reduce the star power of each individual celebrity.
You know, that kind of describes what happened with Squid Game. I mean, I can't speak to whether any of the Korean actors were famous in Korea, but for Americans watching, none of those actors, I mean, who were they? And yet it was still such a popular show. I think that really could be the canary in the mine shaft, the direction that we go in. But let me summarize what I heard, right? So we've actually got four scenarios. One is deepfake revivals of dead celebrities. So not only do we continue with the status quo, but we also have the return of dead celebrities, right? Scenario two is Hollywood stays the same, but now we have deepfake influencers. And so these deepfakes actually replace what are currently the human influencers. Scenario three is what we just talked about, this idea of these no-name, flash-in-the-pan, D-list celebrity actors and actresses who get to be on a streaming service show and then kind of disappear. But then scenario four, the one you didn't mention, is again the continuation of our current hybrid model where we have A through C-list celebrities who can be actors or influencers, and there's no deepfakes. Deepfakes don't end up coming to Hollywood at all. I don't want us to run out of time on this episode. So Caitlin, I'm not going to ask you what you think the signposts and indicators are for each scenario, but I think it's definitely something for our listeners to keep an eye on over the next few years. To what extent will we start to see these deepfakes used? Now, Laura, I'm so curious because I know you're going to tell us about the metaverse, but what is the metaverse?
Well, that's a loaded question. I have to give a selfish shout out to one of my favorite sci-fi authors, Neal Stephenson, here, because he did actually coin the term combining meta and universe in his iconic cyberpunk sci-fi novel, Snow Crash. But for the purposes of this discussion, we're going to define the metaverse as a virtual world. I know that's oversimplifying, but that's what we're going to go with. Think of it as being like the virtual reality world we saw in the movie Ready Player One. Basically, it's the idea that in the future, the internet could be a single, universal, immersive virtual world with which we engage using virtual reality or VR or augmented reality, AR, headsets or other apparatus that might be invented in the future. Then there's the reality of the metaverse. Many people argue that we already have metaverses. For example, game worlds, simulations like Roblox and The Sims. The difference between the theoretical metaverse and what we have already is one of immersion and reach. You can go in and play Roblox, but you don't actually live large parts of your life there. You socialize there, but you don't shop, have meetings, play multiple games, etc. In the tech world, companies like Meta, formerly known as Facebook, Microsoft, Google, and even Apple, and probably countless other small startups are developing VR and AR technologies for business, scientific, and social applications. Certainly, Web3 and the rise of cryptocurrency have increased interest and relevance of the metaverse or completely immersive digital experiences. To stay on trend and to keep up with metaverse hype, fashion, retail, and other consumer brands are creating VR and AR shopping experiences and looking for opportunities for in-metaverse product placement in current digital world spaces like Roblox or Pokemon Go or places you may have already seen it. Because there are already ways to access VR and AR, for example, the Meta Quest, formerly called the Oculus VR headset, or Microsoft's HoloLens, which is largely used for commercial applications, movies like The Matrix, and socially immersive gaming worlds like Roblox, it's easy for us to imagine what the metaverse might be like. Although, of course, some of what we've seen in fiction comes with a negative twist. For example, in Ready Player One, the evil corporation is attempting to control the metaverse and pump it full of advertisements, turning it into a terrible perversion of capitalism, which is actually counter to the tech genius who invented the game.
You know, I actually liked the movie version better than the book of Ready Player One. Go figure. So I get what the metaverse is now, but what scenarios can you come up with for it?
Our scenarios are about the evolution of the metaverse. We want to use imaginative thinking to posit possible futures and look for signposts and indicators of those outcomes. Let's take the Ready Player One movie as an inspiration for the first of our metaverse scenarios. In this scenario, humans move their lives almost totally to the metaverse. Children attend virtual schools and adults have virtual jobs, that is, if they can get one. Most people have little inspiration to interact with each other in the physical world. Signposts for this scenario could include more remote work opportunities in which workers are forced to wear VR headsets and be present all day in VR office spaces, the interfacing of VR applications with real-world services. For example, you walk into a grocery store in the metaverse, and the food you buy is delivered in the real world to your doorstep, but you never left your house. Corporations like Meta and Google pushing hard for the movement of consumerism from the real world to the metaverse. A final indicator could be the government subsidizing internet use as a means to keep citizens connected. It also offers things such as online voting in the metaverse. This is a pretty familiar and admittedly cynical take on the metaverse. Let's posit an alternative, more altruistic scenario, say, of the metaverse. This is scenario two. The metaverse becomes a place of infinite opportunity, a place to experiment, meet people you may never come across in your physical life, and experience places and events unattainable in your current reality. Some signposts for this already exist. For example, people with chronic illnesses or limited incomes can have a picnic next to the Eiffel Tower or trek across Machu Picchu simply by plugging into a virtual world. Or fans can attend a Travis Scott concert in Fortnite that they can't attend in person. Signposts and indicators for this rosy scenario could be the use of augmented reality to enhance human capabilities like sight and hearing, or the ability to create prototypes or problem solve in a virtual world where there are no consequences of failure. For example, users could run different imagined futures, like trying on a different life before you try it out in reality. Want to try skydiving, but you're not sure you'd like it? Try it in the metaverse first. Another signpost could be the creation of more VR apps that bring people together. For example, scientists halfway around the world could work in a hybrid VR real-life lab to solve problems like cancer or multiple sclerosis. This is already happening in some areas of the world using VR and AR. More virtual meet and greets with celebrities or world leaders. This would expand democracy and access to the elite, whether entertainers or other influential people. This is definitely a bit of a Star Trek, rose-colored glasses version of the metaverse future, where everyone can enjoy the metaverse, or at the very least, have access to a holodeck. It's a scenario where the metaverse enhances reality, rather than replacing it. Here's one more somewhat out there scenario that gets a bit closer to the realm of imagination and science fiction. In our third scenario, the metaverse conquers mortality by allowing people to live on in a digital world after their physical bodies have expired. In essence, the metaverse enables us to upload our consciousness and live forever. Much like cyberpunk conscious-swapping fiction, this scenario certainly echoes the plots of Psycho Pass, one of my favorite animes, Ghost in the Shell, and Altered Carbon. What if AI and the mapping of the human brain became so advanced and ethically acceptable that people could translate their consciousness into code and then be able to live on as self-aware avatars in a digital realm? Though to be honest, I would be pretty creeped out to run into my long-deceased nonna in Second Life or see AI-generated text pop up on my phone from my late uncle. Major Westworld Season 3 and the Sublime simulation vibes here. What signposts and indicators would we see here? Well, first, we'd have to have a lot of advancements in technology of brain mapping. But we then also have to figure out what individual consciousness is and how AI and code could actually replicate that. An AI might be able to eventually reproduce our linguistic patterns and approximate what we might say in a conversation, but that's mimicry. So how would we upload our actual selves into a computer? I have to say, if we ever do find a way, I'm really certain a bunch of people will do it. Overall, the metaverse is a fascinating exercise for scenarios analysis, especially because so much has already been dreamed up by the likes of Mark Zuckerberg, Web3 enthusiasts, and your favorite sci-fi authors. As Karen always says, Hollywood is all about fictionalizing structured analytic techniques, and there's definitely no end to the ways Hollywood has already mapped out how a metaverse could look.
As we finish up today's episode, I want to say a little more about imaginative thinking techniques. Imaginative techniques help us come up with new insights or perspectives. Many of these techniques combat what's called status quo bias. In this case, I mean this bias to represent a tendency we have to assume that what's true now will be true a week, a month, a year, or 10 years from now. It's easier to imagine things being the same than changed in some way. In fact, we have an emotional preference for the maintenance of the current state of affairs. Besides alternative future scenarios, the other two imaginative techniques are brainstorming and outside-in thinking. Since we won't be giving them their own episodes, I want to say a little about each of them right now. We've probably all participated in a brainstorm, whether it was with a group or individually. Most of us probably did them in school, and maybe a few of us have even done them from work. Brainstorms are good because they maximize creativity in the thinking process. As we get everything out on paper, there's an opportunity to think of new ideas, bring up obscure evidence, and identify issues. When done formally, a brainstorm is a two-phase, 12-step structured process led by a facilitator and recorded by a note taker. But most of us will probably never be in a brainstorm that intense. So here are the key takeaways to maximize the usefulness of a group brainstorm. Rather than having participants shout out ideas, give everyone in the group post-it notes. Ask a key question, then let the participants write answers on the post-it notes that they can stick to the wall. Once everyone has written down as many thoughts as they can come up with, have them group the notes according to commonalities. These groups should help drive forward discussion related to the key question. This may sound more complicated than it is. Let's say you're a business owner and you're asking your employees how they think the business could be more successful. After a brainstorm, you might find that while you as the owner were thinking about reducing overhead and increasing prices, your employees think you need to work on marketing and an interior redesign for your storefront. An online survey might not have unearthed these kinds of thoughts, but a quick half-hour long or hour-long brainstorm may. By having people write down ideas rather than say them aloud, it lets people who might not like to talk in groups express their ideas. And seeing ideas written down might spark new ideas from other people. Outside-in thinking, as a structured analytic technique, is a bit more complicated, and it doesn't help that the name doesn't tell us what it is or what it does. Boiled down, what we're trying to do is think about all the factors affecting an issue. As humans, we tend to only use the information that we know or that's at hand. The outside-in thinking technique reminds us that we have to hunt out as much data as we can in order to fully understand a situation. If we were looking at a national-level issue, for example, Scotland's independence movement, we would walk through STEPM. That's the influence of social, technological, economic, environmental, political, and military factors. How do these things all shape the movement, both directly and indirectly? We'd want to identify which factors matter and which don't, then keep an eye on the ones that do. But most of us aren't thinking about national-level issues like that. So to go back to the business example I just used, if we were trying to consider what factors would affect our store over the next few years, we might think about things like the national macroeconomy, the local economy, the development of the neighborhood around the store, fluctuations in the market size, the potential for competitors to move into the area, and even the risk of supply chain disruptions. Some things we might be able to control, but most we won't be able to, and we want to know which is which. I want to close by saying that in the last few episodes, I've highlighted how Hollywood inadvertently creates its own versions of structured analytic techniques. For example, high impact, low probability, or what if scenarios. But if we take these in aggregate, we can see them as scenarios exercises. For example, to go back to my alien contact scenario, in the 2016 movie Arrival, humans and aliens work together to develop a means of communication. In Independence Day, released in 1996, the aliens come to Earth to destroy us. And in 1977's Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the aliens take human volunteers back to space. No matter what the scenario, from zombies to vampires to werewolves, by now, Hollywood has probably created a movie about it. The structured analytic technique that we'll be looking at in the next episode is called red teaming. This is another imaginative technique that puts you in someone else's shoes. Which celebrity are we going to pretend to be? Find out on the next episode of Gossip Int.